and where we are met with cynicism and doubt and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Yes, 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 it's time. We all come together. Ha-ha! Barack Obama!
Yes, we can be.
Barack Obama! For the people saying, yes, we can, sure. Si se puede, today is a new day. So come on and throw your hands up, every woman, every man. Barack Obama.
Yes, we can, yeah.
Barack Obama.
We are ever
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Barack Obama.
Building blocks of a new cloud. A million stops in a new route. Then acting out of the possible. Feels better than the cute town. Political change, critical pain. All in it to rebel is the reign of a power to the people, so that we may develop a sequel. For living enough of the beast, for pushing the envelope, honoring all of the work. Paying attention to reason, dipping our feet and dipping the moderate work. Teaching minds of a new height, seeking finds of a new life. This is the meaning of outreach. When it's out of reach, we still
rock Obama.
Yes, we can.
Everybody, and welcome to Galactic Roundtable with Beth True Twin. We will spend the next little while working together on our ascension. We will work on personal, planetary, galactic, universal, omniversal, and cosmic ascension. The cosmos beyond describes all the non-physical antimatter universes. As we creator gods came to this part of the Nebadon universe, aeons ago, we birthed through Mother Sekhmet's Yani at Galactic Center. The end of time has been prophesied in many ethnic cultures for thousands of years. Last summer, August 17th, 2010, the Milky Way galaxy aligned with the sun. This marked the constellation movements of the Mayan calendar. It came sooner than the predicted December 21st, 2012. Time has speeded up due to the collective consciousness of totality and divine grace of all that is, raising their vibrations in a constant process of ascension to a level where we have surpassed the conjunct of the Milky Way with the sun. We are in the end times. It marks the end of the grand experiment of good and evil, of duality. It marks the end of the fallen angels on Earth planet. With their removal, we will become the 33rd member of the Intergalactic Confederation of Worlds. We all have incarnated in physical bodies on Earth to change from a planet of duality to a planet of peace. We are working with the Syrian commander, Barack Obama, who is the 9th member of the Syrian Council of Nine on Sirius A. His head of Secret Service is a physical template of Lord Sananda, who we call King of Swords. Millions of walk-in souls living in human bodies are all telepathically connected and working together in every walk of life. Police, Interpol, government agencies, military, lawyers, judges, journalists, and too many to list here. Each of us play an important role, where the outcome will be the capture and arrest of the intergalactic war criminals, the fallen angels, who were trying to have Earth and her resources as their own, as well as tens of other planets. We, on the ground crew, work closely with the Galactic Federation, headed by the Admiral Lord Sananda, a higher aspect of the Prophet Jesus, also known as Yeshua, and the Captain, Lord Ashtar. They have full say in many of the aspects of this mission for Earth ascension. They work directly with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, as well as millions of other white knights around the world. They ask that we call on them as we need to for more help in our lives to help us with our mission. Feel free to call on them and they will be there at your service. You play an important part in this as you wake up to truth and share the news with others. We must work together to dissolve the programming within the Matrix. I will be pre-recording this program every week. I will be doing it recorded, not live, because it is better for my life situation. It is also less expensive to do a program without the use of an engineer answering the calls and monitoring. I want to thank BBS Radio, the greatest internet radio in the galaxy, for inviting me to be here each week. This is our family and where we join to check in with each other at galacticroundtable.com. I keep this site up to date every day as part of my spiritual service. I have 2 volunteers working with me, and they lovingly devote their service every day. I'm grateful for all who are part of the family at Galactic Roundtable. I manage to keep everything going with your donations, and you may find a donation button on the site. I use the money for electric, Wi-Fi, server fees, and radio broadcasting. I thank you, everybody, for your continuous generosity and love. In exchange, I work hard to give back as much as possible, and you may look at my other website, www.cosmicascension.com. I'm continuously adding to it, and there are many features for self-discovery and healing. This is a place where we go and we raise the questions, where am I? Who am I? Where am I from? And why am I here? I am beginning my charitable mission for World Service post-Nasara. You can find information about Antares Arcturus Midway Foundation at aamidway.com. And as we carry out lives of service to our fellow women, child, and men on Earth inside the Matrix, we continue to have tests and challenges from that concept that I affectionately call 3D. The first dimension is a point in space. The second dimension is a plane, a flat, barren surface. The third dimension is latitude. Imagine a cube with six planes connected together, the top, bottom, and four sides, floating up and down. Within this cube is the third dimensional space. The fourth dimension is time, pure and simple, a point in space in relation to time on a timeline and a dimension. The fifth dimension is the etheric realm with no time. We exist there simultaneously now. We travel in our etheric bodies to the etheric realms at night when we sleep. Our etheric bodies are known by many names, such as our avatar body, like Jake Sully and Neytiri, the lion woman, in the movie Avatar. They are also known as our cosmic consciousness. We are multidimensional beings living on multidimensional Earth as one people, one land, one love. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable on BBSRadio.com Station 2, where we will discuss all things galactic with divine grace and the totality of all that is. Welcome. Greetings, everybody. This is Beth. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable. I'm coming on with a short recording at the beginning of the program. I want to thank you for being here tonight. I want to thank everybody who donated this week. The donations keep me going, and they are of prime importance right now. Thank you so much. Also, thank you for purchasing the ebook on Galactic Roundtable of Lord Ashtar and the Galactic Federation. I hope you're enjoying it. And I'll be putting out a sneak peek tonight. And with that, I will be including how to transfer the ebook onto your reader. So if you own a reader, it will go on to most readers. So I'm including an article with the instructions for that. So if you will be purchasing it to read on a reader, it may be cheaper to go ahead and order the ebook and transfer it. So I'll give you those instructions. And I don't understand. I can't figure out what's wrong. But tonight my internet has gone off, turned off, 5 times in an hour. So that made me change the programming for tonight. I'm going to repeat the Ashtar special presentation from last week. However, if you were here last week and you heard the UFO moon rising video, which was very good, we're going to pull that out and put in something new that I had recorded yesterday called The Calling. It's absolutely fabulous. You will enjoy it very much. Some of the information's old, but it's mixed in with a lot of new information that you probably have never heard before. It's on politics and the world scene. I feel that with what's happening in politics right now, it will be very interesting. So we'll have a new presentation tonight, but the Ashtar information will still be there. Many people said they missed last week's program, so I hope you enjoy it tonight. Then at the end, we have a little extra time. So we're going to do an encore of UFO Moon Rising. So if you haven't heard it, it's absolutely fabulous. So just keep going at the end. So look for new posts tonight on Galactic Roundtable. I've been working all day on about 3 new posts I'm going to be putting up tonight. So enjoy the program. Thank you for being here. Please check out Lord Ashtar and the Galactic Federation. It has new information you've never heard before. And thank you for your continued support of the work. All my love to you. Have a wonderful week. Peace. Namaste. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable. This is Beth. Tonight will be a special presentation on Lord Ashtar and the Galactic Federation. I'd like to introduce you to some of the gems that Ashtar left us, and I want to share those with you tonight. The first thing I want to do is start off tonight with a prayer and then a meditation. So I'm going to play some music, and this song that I'll be playing is not in English, but I'll tell you that the words say that it's an invocation to the flame that's in the center of your heart, your violet flame, the flame that ignites all wisdom and all love inside of you. This song is worshiping the flame that's inside your own heart and saying that when you pay homage to that flame, then you become one with your highest self and all your dreams come true. This full moon that we had back in July is the once a year full moon to the guru. So it's to our teachers, and tonight Ashtar is our teacher. So the full moon in July and August is called the Guru Purima. And it is a time to rededicate ourselves to our mentors, to learning sacred scripture, and becoming one with wisdom and enlightenment. So please relax, enjoy the song, and we'll go right into meditation following that. Thank you.
Shreni Bhishana Varagunasto Mabhushana Jani Bhayasthana Dharana Jagadavasthana Karana Nikhila Dushkarma Karshana Nigama Saddharma Rashana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Suha Jagadrupa Mandana Surajana Trasa Khandana Satamakha Brahma Vandita Satapatha Brahma Nandita Prajita Vidvatsa Bakshita Ajana Hirbudhya Lakshita Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Nijapada Prita Sadgana Nirupadhispita Shatguna Nigama Nirvyudha Vaibhava Nijaparam Yuha Vaibhava Harihaya Dveshidharana Harapura Ploshakarana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Sputata Tijjala Pinjara Rudhutara Jvala Panjara Parigata Pratra Vigraha Parimita Prajna Durgraha Praharana Grama Mandita Harijana Grana Pandita Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Bhuvana Netastrayi Maya Savana Tejastrayi Maya Niravadhi Svadu Chinmaya Nikhila Shakti Jagammaya Amita Vishvakriya Maya Shamita Vishvadbhaya Maya Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Sri Sudarshana Mahita Sampat Sadakshara
vihita sampat shadakshara shadana chakra pratishthita sakala tattva pratishthita vividha sankalpa kalpaka vibhudha sankalpa kalpaka jaya jaya sri sudarshana jaya jaya sri sudarshana pratimukhalidha bandhura prutu mahaheti dantura vikatamala parishkruta vilidhamaya bahishkruta sthira mahayantra yantrita drudhadaya tantra yantrita jaya jaya sri sudarshana jaya jaya sri sudarshana danuja vistara kartana danuja vidya vikartana janita misra vikartana tajada vidya nikartana amara drushta svavikrama samara dushta bhramikrama jaya jaya sri sudarshana jaya jaya sri sudarshana dvijadushkaminam prabhutasaram pathatam venkatanayaka pranitam vishame vimanoratha prathavan na vihanyetarathanga duryaguptah iti sri vedanta acharyasya krutishu sudarshanashtakam.
Okay, I hope you're completely relaxed now. I'm going to start some background sounds for our meditation. And it's loading. Okay. Here's our meditation. Make yourself comfortable on the floor or in a chair, keeping spine and neck in alignment. Arms relaxed by your side or in your lap, then close your eyes gently. Now focus on your breathing. Remember that the breath and the mind are closely connected. By controlling the breath and making it very slow, you are calming the mind. This calm is essential to good health. Now relax each limb of your body. Start by giving the toes a gentle shake. Then relax them. Relax the ankles and the lower legs, the knees, the thighs, the hips. Wherever there is a joint, concentrate on relaxing there. The upper and lower limbs will automatically relax. In the same manner, release all tension and tightness in your spine and back. Relax your navel area and feel the entire abdomen relax. Relax your chest so heart and lungs will benefit. Then the shoulders, relaxing the arms. Continue with the forehead to relax face and scalp. The entire body is now completely relaxed. Breathe slowly and evenly and quiet the mind. Know that all is well. You are safe and secure. All your needs are taken care of. Now visualize yourself lying on the beach. Make it the most beautiful beach you have ever seen. Notice the color of the sand and the clarity of the water. Slowly walk down to the water. Go in to where you feel comfortable. Then lie down and float on the water. Allow the water to support you entirely. Allow the motion of the water to lull you and comfort you. Relax completely into the water, knowing at all times that you are completely safe. Now, allow yourself to go under the water. Imagine yourself swimming effortlessly, as though the water were your home. You can breathe easily, as though you were on dry land. Swim around and explore all the pretty rocks and plants you see. Look at the many fish swimming past you. You are at home here. You feel safe and secure. Now float to the top and let yourself rest on the surface again. Feel the rhythmic movement of the waves carry you and become one with your breathing. Let your awareness expand and blend with the waves until you become one with the waves. Observe the spray that flies into the air, then mistily filters down again to join the wave. Watch how free it is and how easily it gives of itself, knowing that no harm will come to it, knowing that it will return and once more become the wave. Visualize yourself being as free and unconcerned as the ocean spray. Trust the universe to take total care of you. The sun is overhead, shining warmly. All about you are the reflections of the sunlight on the water, like tiny suns, unique lights unto themselves that dance and move with the motion of the water. Allow your body to disperse itself further over the ocean surface. Stretch out and let the lights that are dancing over the surface dance over you as your body and the ocean surface blend and merge. Feel that you have become millions of tiny sparkling lights. Slowly, gently, begin to pull your body back together, leaving behind any distress, soreness, or disease. Very gently, your body takes form again, floating once more on the surface of the ocean. Now you may glide gently back to the beach again. Feel the sand beneath you and let it run through your fingers. Stretch out in the sunlight and absorb the light of life, of the life-giving sun, then slowly let the scene fade from your mind. Become aware of your breathing and of your body in this room. Slowly begin to move hands and feet. Stretch your arms above your head and give your whole body a good stretch. Relax, and when you are ready, open your eyes and observe how you feel. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable. This is Beth. Tonight will be a special presentation on Lord Ashtar and the Galactic Federation. I'd like to introduce you to some of the gems that Ashtar left us, and I want to share those with you tonight. The first thing I want to do is start off tonight with a prayer and then a meditation. So I'm going to play some music, and This song that I'll be playing is not in English, but I'll tell you that the words say that it's an invocation to the flame that's in the center of your heart, your violet flame, the flame that ignites all wisdom and all love inside of you. This song is worshiping the flame that's inside your own heart and saying that when you pay homage to that flame, then you become one with your highest self and all your dreams come true. This full moon that we had back in July is the once a year full moon to the guru. So it's to our teachers, and tonight Ashtar is our teacher. So the full moon in July and August is called the Guru Purima. And it is a time to rededicate ourselves to our mentors, to learning sacred scripture, and becoming one with wisdom and enlightenment. So please relax, enjoy the song, and we'll go right into meditation following that. Thank you.
Shreni Bhishana Varagunastoma Bhushana Jani Bhayastana Dharana Jagadavastana Karana Nikhila Dushkarma Karshana Nikamasadharma Rarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Shubha Jagat Rupa Mandana Surajana Trasa Khandana Satamakha Brahma Vandita Satapatha Brahma Nandita Prajita Vidvat Sapakshita Ajadahir Budhya Lakshita Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Nijapada Prita Sadgana Nirupadhis Prita Shadguna Nigama Nirvyudha Vaibhava Nijaparam Yuha Vaibhava Harihaya Dveshidharana Harapura Ploshakarana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Sputatati Jala Pinjara Rudhutara Jvala Panjara Parikata Pratna Vigraha Parimita Prajna Durgraha Praharana Grama Mandita Parijana Trana Pandita Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Bhuvana Netastrayi Maya Savana Tejastrayi Maya Niravadhisvadu Chinmaya Nikhila Shakti Jagammaya Amita Vishvakriya Maya Shamita Vishvadbhaya Maya Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Jaya Jaya Shri Sudarshana Mahita Sampat Sadakshara Vihita Sampat Shadakshara Shadara Chakra Pratishthita Sakala Tattva Pratishthita Vividha Sankalpa Kalpaka
विबुध संकल्प कल्पक जय जय श्री सुदर्शन जय जय श्री सुदर्शन प्रतिमुखालीढ बंधुरा पृथु महाहेति दंतुरा विकट माला परिष्कृत विविध माया बहिष्कृत स्थिर महायंत्र यंत्रिता दृढ़दया तंत्र यंत्रिता जय जय श्री सुदर्शन जय जय श्री सुदर्शन धनुज विस्तार कर्तन धनुज विद्या विकर्तन जनित मिश्रा विकर्तन भजद विद्या निकर्तन अमर दृष्ट स्व विक्रम समर दुष्ट भ्रमिक्रम जय जय श्री सुदर्शन जय जय श्री सुदर्शन द्विजदुष्कमिदं प्रभूतसारम् पठतां वेङ्कटनायक प्रणीतम् विषमे विमनोरथ प्रधावन् न विहन्येत रथाङ्ग दुर्यगुप्तः इति श्री वेदान्ताचार्यस्य कृतिषु सुदर्शनाष्टकम्।
Okay, I hope you're completely relaxed now. I'm going to start some background sounds for our meditation. And it's loading. Okay. Here's our meditation. Make yourself comfortable on the floor or in a chair, keeping spine and neck in alignment. Arms relaxed by your side or in your lap, then close your eyes gently. Now focus on your breathing. Remember that the breath and the mind are closely connected. By controlling the breath and making it very slow, you are calming the mind. This calm is essential to good health. Now relax each limb of your body. Start by giving the toes a gentle shake. Then relax them. Relax the ankles and the lower legs, the knees, the thighs, the hips. Wherever there is a joint, concentrate on relaxing there. The upper and lower limbs will automatically relax. In the same manner, release all tension and tightness in your spine and back. Relax your navel area and feel the entire abdomen relax. Relax your chest so heart and lungs will benefit. Then the shoulders, relaxing the arms. Continue with the forehead to relax face and scalp. The entire body is now completely relaxed. Breathe slowly and evenly and quiet the mind. Know that all is well. You are safe and secure. All your needs are taken care of. Now visualize yourself lying on the beach. Make it the most beautiful beach you have ever seen. Notice the color of the sand and the clarity of the water. Slowly walk down to the water. Go in to where you feel comfortable. Then lie down and float on the water. Allow the water to support you entirely. Allow the motion of the water to lull you and comfort you. Relax completely into the water, knowing at all times that you are completely safe. Now, allow yourself to go under the water. Imagine yourself swimming effortlessly, as though the water were your home. You can breathe easily, as though you were on dry land. Swim around and explore all the pretty rocks and plants you see. Look at the many fish swimming past you. You are at home here. You feel safe and secure. Now float to the top and let yourself rest on the surface again. Feel the rhythmic movement of the waves carry you and become one with your breathing. Let your awareness expand and blend with the waves until you become one with the waves. Observe the spray that flies into the air, then mistily filters down again to join the wave. Watch how free it is and how easily it gives of itself, knowing that no harm will come to it, knowing that it will return and once more become the wave. Visualize yourself being as free and unconcerned as the ocean spray. Trust the universe to take total care of you. The sun is overhead, shining warmly. All about you are the reflections of the sunlight on the water, like tiny suns, unique lights unto themselves that dance and move with the motion of the water. Allow your body to disperse itself further over the ocean surface. Stretch out and let the lights that are dancing over the surface dance over you as your body and the ocean surface blend and merge. Feel that you have become millions of tiny sparkling lights. Slowly, gently, begin to pull your body back together, leaving behind any distress, soreness, or disease. Very gently, your body takes form again, floating once more on the surface of the ocean. Now you may glide gently back to the beach again. Feel the sand beneath you and let it run through your fingers. Stretch out in the sunlight and absorb the light of life, of the life-giving sun. Then slowly let the scene fade from your mind. Become aware of your breathing and of your body in this room. Slowly begin to move hands and feet. Stretch your arms above your head and give your whole body a good stretch. Relax. And when you are ready, open your eyes and observe how you feel.
Search out the truth for themselves. The arguments and conclusions contained within this work are the accumulated result of over 25 years of investigation and personal research. Many of the arguments presented here are not new. However, in order to see the larger picture, it is necessary that the many smaller pieces of the puzzle first be put into order. The information contained herein is as important to mankind as it is urgent. However, in an almost unfathomable act of irresponsibility, it is, for the most part, being ignored by governments, academics, and media all over the world. This film is designed to the opinion of the makers of this film that the people of the world very much need to understand the true nature of the problems faced by the human family in order to find real and meaningful solutions to them, and that these problems do seriously need to be addressed in order to secure a peaceful and prosperous future. We do not ask or expect anyone to believe what is presented within the chapters of this film without first investigating all the evidence for themselves, and we very much urge you to do so. Remember, the truth is always out there somewhere, sometimes right in front of our eyes, if we would only choose to notice. Over the last several decades, the human consciousness has been saturated with a huge intertwining web of conspiracy theories, which are often too overwhelming for the average human to understand, and may in fact provide people with more questions than answers. And if someone is to suddenly see the bigger picture of what is really going on, and seriously tries to alert others, then the public has been carefully trained to view them as a crackpot, or label them as another conspiracy theorist. It has been very cleverly orchestrated so that no one ever discovers the whole truth about anything. And if anyone ever does figure it out, they are ridiculed and silenced. Now, however, due to the growth of the internet, it has become a lot harder to silence people and to keep information contained. So what if a global conspiracy does indeed exist? And what if people are kept blind to it because they have been carefully taught to associate the word theory with the word conspiracy, so they never take the time to see that which is right before their eyes? And what if this conspiracy deeply affects our future, our education system, our media, our government, our monetary system, and our beautiful planet? If such a conspiracy does indeed exist, then most certainly it would affect everyone on a personal level. So would it not be imperative for you to become aware of such information, both for your own well-being and for that of your children? It is quite understandable that due to the overwhelming nature of this topic, many people do not even want to begin to look into such things. But if one does take the time to look and steps back a little further, a definite picture comes clearly into view, and what is found is a situation that could be easily rectified. Would people simply take the time to become aware?
The secret organizations of the world power elite are no longer secret. It's no longer a theory. It's no longer a theory. It's no longer a theory.
All matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration.
The only truth you know is what you get over this tube.
We are all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively.
An entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tomb. This tube is the gospel, the ultimate revelation.
Their whole purpose throughout history has been to teach a small number of people how to become adept at controlling everyone else.
There's no such thing as death. Life is only a dream, and we're the imagination of ourselves.
The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. Nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care.
Whether you decide to take the time to listen to so-called conspiracy theories or not, there are some things that should be clearly understood by all. And these are not conspiracy theories by any stretch of the imagination. They are well-documented, quite traceable, and very provable facts. And these facts are as follows. There is one ruling bloodline that exists on this earth. This ruling bloodline is very old. It is the same bloodline that has always ruled the earth ever since the days of ancient Egypt, and it is very pervasive. For example, many people think that anyone can get to be president of the United States, but the reality is that a large number of presidents are in fact related, and their lineage can be traced back to European monarchy, and in particular to the line of William of Orange. This elite bloodline can actually be traced back a good deal further than that, and even back as far as the royalty of ancient Egypt. And it is this very same bloodline that has ruled the earth ever since, and to which the British monarchy and many other world leaders can ultimately be traced. The families of this line are steeped in ancient traditions and symbolism, and they do not attempt to hide these connections. Just a look at the royal coat of arms, the royal regalia, and the coronation throne clearly demonstrates these connections. In fact, the signs and symbols are always right there in plain view for discerning eyes to clearly see. One only needs to take the time to look. Any real investigation shows us that the entire financial system by which the world is run today is actually operated by the Crown. And contrary to popular belief, the Crown does not refer to the royal family or to the British monarchy. The Crown actually refers to the inner city of London, which is, in fact, a privately owned corporation that functions as a completely separate sovereign state outside the jurisdiction of England. Most people are completely unaware that when they swear allegiance to the Crown, they are actually swearing allegiance to this private corporate empire. The inner city of London also has two sister city states of Vatican City and Washington's District of Columbia, both of which are also separate sovereign states within their host countries. Each of these three city-states has its own flag, its own laws, its own news services, and its own police forces, and each pays no taxes to the host country in which it is located. These three cities form a private, covert empire that operates the entire Western world that is known as the Empire of the Three Cities. The inner city of London is the center for monetary control. Vatican City is the center for spiritual control. Washington, D.C. is the center for military control. It is the individuals who control this private corporate empire who call all the shots and pull all the strings. These people control all governments and all mainstream media via the stranglehold they have over the world monetary system. And more people are becoming aware of the reality of this all the time. The beginnings of this private empire can be traced back to a secret meeting that took place in 1773 between Mayor Amschel Rothschild and the heads of 12 other powerful families, including such dynasties as the Warburgs, the Schiffs, and the Oppenheimers. Following this meeting, Rothschild employed the services of a man by the name of Adam Weishaupt in the creation of a society known today as the Bavarian Illuminati, which was itself officially founded 3 years later in 1776. Many people think the Illuminati is a myth, but in actual fact, this society is still in operation to this day and has since become the most powerful organization in the world. The surviving members of this order are the individuals who also indirectly own and operate the World Bank. It is the World Bank who covertly dictates global oil prices and whose shareholders also control the global Federal Reserve banking system. Each Western government actually has the legal right to coin its own money and to control its value, but they do not. They borrow money from this privately run central banking system. Through the magic of fractional reserve banking, these central banks are able to create money from thin air via the creation of money as debt, and then profit on it by charging interest on the loans. Most people are duped into believing that their taxes pay for infrastructure, such as roads, schools, and without taxes, the country would fall apart. But this is completely untrue, for the money is in fact borrowed from a private bank, and then you are taxed in order to pay off the interest on the loan. No matter how you choose to look at things, one thing must be clearly understood, and that is that every person in the Western world who has a job is forced each year to give away approximately 3 months' worth of their wages in taxes, and that money goes directly into the pockets of the private individuals who own and run the Federal Reserve banking system. It's one big, privately run scam.
We've been lied to. We've been lied to. We've been lied to. We've been lied to. There are people who are guiding your life and you don't even know it. We've been lied to. You had better wake up and understand.
There is indeed a global conspiracy going on, and the way it has been carried out and concealed is through control of the global money system, and hence control of all other subsequent systems of importance down the food chain, such as governments and the media. It's important to understand that control of the global money system has been achieved through control of the global central banking system, and that this system is a privately run enterprise. It is a private business that runs for a profit, and it is owned and operated by wealthy international banking dynasties such as the Rothschild. And the Rockefellers. And please clearly understand that when you control the money supply, you control the government. When you control the government, you control the people. When you control the money supply and the flow of information, you control the government, you control the people. And you control everything they know and everything they believe to be true. When you do it globally, you control all. It's that simple. During World War II, every country on both sides of the conflict was financed by the very same private bankers who lent out every dollar these countries used to finance their war effort at interest. In the ensuing years, the ordinary people from both sides saw great hardships and suffering. And during the fighting, there were heavy casualties amongst all the peoples involved. World War II cost over 50 million lives. And when it was over, each country that participated was left with a huge debt to the banks. It was always the people who paid the price through increased taxes, longer hours, and poorer working conditions. And qui bono? Who benefited? Well, J.D. Rockefeller stayed home. And he made profits in excess of $200 million from it. For international bankers, there is nothing more profitable than war. And so when it is taken into account that these same international bankers now control all the major media, have ties to all the major oil cartels and arms dealers, finance all the main political parties, and control the currency of all Western nations, is it any wonder that the world stays in a state of conflict and war? In the months following World War II, a number of prominent members of Hitler's core Nazi infrastructure were smuggled out of Germany and into America in a documented joint operation conducted with the Vatican, known as Operation Paperclip. Operation Paperclip saw as many as 80 Nazi war criminals that held key positions in Hitler's empire and had detailed knowledge of the Nazi war machine taken to America. These people included figures such as Klaus Barbie, along with numerous Nazi scientists who were all removed to the United States, supposedly to assist the government with spying operations against Russia and for assistance in the US rocket and space programs. Many of these men were given advisory positions on boards dealing with domestic and international security. And it is one such advisory panel that gave birth to the National Security Council. The NSC then combined with the Council on Foreign Relations and spawned its muscle, the CIA. Soon after the formation of these organizations came the creation of the United Nations. Touted as a supposed solver of world conflict, the UN was supposedly put there to maintain the safety and security of the people and to ensure that nothing as heinous as World War II could ever happen again. And the world has seen nothing but a continuous stream of war ever since. In fact, since the formation of the NSC, the CIA, and subsequently the UN in 1947, the Earth has seen 258 conflicts, and in fact, more wars than in its entire recorded history prior to that point. Just why is that? Now, each time one of these wars has erupted, usually in an area that never saw any real conflict before, it's happened in such a way that it's invited Western intervention, and each time we've been told by the media that this intervention is to ensure peace. Each time they say it, to make peace we use war. War brings peace. War is peace. It's doublespeak. If you want peace with another nation, you don't go to war with them. You go to peace with them. You work at gaining an understanding for each other, and you help each other. You don't go and kill each other's children and both borrow money from the same bank at interest in order to do it. And noticeably, none of the areas in which such military intervention has occurred ever truly become peaceful again. Each one just stays in a state of guarded tension, looked over by peacekeepers, and continues to function in a state of human suffering, and as another endless source of income for the international banksters. In 1947, as soon as the CIA was formed, the organization began to spread its tentacles worldwide, finding footholds and taking root in almost all countries on Earth. And from there, and working closely with its Israeli counterpart, the Mossad, the CIA has managed to undermine nations from within by using false flag operations, propaganda, and terrorism. And please understand that these organizations were created on the recommendations of top-level Nazis, and they were founded and operate on Nazi principles. The CIA has since become the number one trafficker of drugs and human cargo in the world. The CIA are not the good guys. They are anything but. They are a criminal cabal disguised as an intelligence agency that is based on Nazi principles, has unlimited resources, both financially and militarily, and are answerable to no one. The CIA and Mossad function as virtually the one organization. Neither they or their agents have been responsible for virtually all terrorist bombings the world has seen in the last 60 years. Their prime mandate is to undermine world security and pave the way for the introduction of a global government controlled by a global monetary system. A global monetary system that is wholly owned and operated by private international banksters. At the end of World War II, the Reich didn't lose or surrender. Germany did. The Reich simply went underground and disappeared. The truth is that the Reich was controlled and financed by European bankers right from the start. And at the end of the war, they simply moved it to America and let it continue to function, but hidden in the shadows. And unbeknownst to the American people, or to Congress, or to the people of the world, it has continued to operate from behind the scenes. And over the last 60 years, it has infiltrated itself into all important levels of government, and industry, and the media, and has gradually spread itself out across the entire globe.
Forget the politicians. They're an irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media news, all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls.
The current world situation has been carefully planned, and it is a plan that has been long in the making. This entire economic and political climate has been brought about by design. In the late 1970s, a plan was put forth by the CIA to train Islamic fighters in the Afghan war against Russia in a new form of radical Islamic thinking. The concept was to teach the Mujahideen that the Russians were not just attacking their country, they were attacking their faith. During that period, large numbers of fighters came to Afghanistan to help in the struggle, and large training camps were set up and run by the CIA to accommodate them. The man who was selected to lead the mercenaries by the CIA was one Osama bin Laden, who was given the code name Tim Osman, which was used on trips made to Washington to lobby for funds. The trip to Washington was made by bin Laden on at least two occasions. During this period, the CIA taught this new form of radical Islamic thinking and provided terrorist training to hundreds of thousands of Islamic fighters, being careful to also keep a comprehensive database on all the people that they had trained. The Arabic name for this terrorist database was Al-Qaeda. Concerned over this new form of radical Islamism and the sheer volume of fighters the CIA was turning out, then Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto wrote to the director of the CIA and cautioned him openly, saying in her letter, "You are creating Frankenstein."
It's a lie.
But her warnings went unheeded. They were not heeded because a radical network of extremists was exactly what the CIA had wished to create right from the very beginning. For without such a radical network of terrorists, the long-planned war on terror would never have been possible. In 2000, a neoconservative think tank called the Project for the New American Century released a document entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses. Outlined in that document was a plan for full-spectrum dominance of the globe. Air, land, sea, space, the internet. Everything. In that document it said, and I quote, "The process of transformation, even if it brings about a revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor." 1 year after George W. Bush gained office, in the most contested election in U.S. history, and many prominent members of PNAC were given positions in his administration, America experienced its new Pearl Harbor. And the entire PNAC plan was put into effect. Coincidence? When the events of September the 11th, 2001 unfolded, the troops were already there waiting to go into Afghanistan, and the Patriot Act and Homeland Security legislation had already long been drawn up. They were already there, just waiting for the right event in order to introduce them. So when 9/11 happened, qui bono, who benefited? Afghanistan? Iraq? Did any Arab country? No. But the Bush administration was given an open checkbook with which to take control of the Afghani poppy fields, the Iraqi oil fields, and the oil-rich and natural gas-rich Caspian Basin. And all protests to the invasions of the two countries was squashed before it started. Then the 7/7 bombings in London occurred, and again, who benefited? Islamism? Hardly. But support for the war in Iraq knew no bounds. The Blair government secured a massive increase in police and military funding and was also able to install thousands of domestic surveillance cameras throughout England. And then amid massive war protests in Australia, we saw the Bali bombing. And yet again, who benefited? A Muslim cleric who suddenly found himself wanted by the CIA at the centre of world attention? No, but all anti-war protests in Australia suddenly dissipated. The Australian Prime Minister John Howard received a huge boost in popularity. The Australian police got to establish themselves as the local police of the entire Australasian region. And both the Australian and the Indonesian military secured massive increases in funding. So who really benefited? The real facts, and as can be seen clearly by examining the evidence in all three cases, is that each one of these so-called terrorist attacks was a false flag operation designed to remove more rights from the people of Western countries and to further consolidate the hold the international banking elite has over our world. The information on all these cases exists. It's out there in the public domain. Please do the research. Because the media is just not telling you. A large portion of Al-Qaeda funding comes from the Pakistani ISI, and it still does. And yet the ISI is...
It's loading everything.
Terrorist attacks was a false flag operation designed to remove more rights from the people of Western countries and to further consolidate the hold the international banking elite has over our world. The information on all these cases exists. It's out there in the public domain. Please do the research because the media is just not telling you. A large portion of Al-Qaeda funding comes from the Pakistani ISI, and it still does. And yet the ISI is an openly admitted and funded wing of the CIA. The CIA created hundreds of thousands of extremists and trained them in radical Islamic thinking, and it kept a database on them all. All these extremists still receive funding from the CIA, channeled to them by the ISI, and don't even realize who they are funded by. Osama bin Laden has been a CIA asset right from the start, and when the US decided to go after bin Laden, they used the name of the CIA database as a terrorist organization. The war on terror is fake. It's a setup. There is no global network of terrorists waiting around every corner to blow everybody up. It's a myth. All the bombings are carefully orchestrated and follow a noticeable pattern, and you are never given the true facts or an objective look at the evidence in any one of these cases. And just think about it. A few years ago, no one had ever heard of Al-Qaeda. Yet now, almost every mishap in the world is blamed on them, and yet no one can seem to find any of them. Occasionally, some CIA asset that we've never seen before comes on the screen and says a few condemning words, and we're supposed to take that as confirmation. Can you see how easy it is for them to pull this scam off simply by controlling the media? And while people have been distracted and living in fear of terrorism, international law enforcement borders have been slowly eroded away. For example, to clean up after the recent tornadoes in America, Canadian soldiers were used. Australian and Indonesian police now routinely train together. And now remember here that Indonesian police have a reputation for being amongst the most brutal in the world. And yet here we have Indonesian and Australian police swapping ideas and methods. Many people have been trained to think that to talk about this stuff is to be anti-American. But nothing could be further from the truth. The perpetrators of all of this are based mainly in England and Europe. They are just using the military might of America to carry out their plans because they have usurped the American government. American President George W. Bush all but subverted the entire US Constitution, and he robbed the country blind. However, it must be understood that it is not America itself doing this. The people who are doing this have set themselves up globally. Remember the words of JFK.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine.
For years, it's been used coming out of our taps to fight tooth decay. More than 1,000 scientists and medical professionals from across the world have banded together to warn us that even in its most diluted form, fluoride is still a poison and can harm your health.
We can't dump it into the sea, but we put it into our own drinking water. It's extraordinary. Fluoride in our water supply is a very real and ever-present risk to our population at large.
And there's also concern about advice given by dentists that it's okay for kids to swallow toothpaste containing fluoride.
Recommending that they swallow their toothpaste is very, very poor advice.
The fluoride is poisoning us and the research is being overlooked.
One of the two main tools used to keep you in a state of confusion without you knowing it is the fluoride in your toothpaste and water supplies. There are also many other chemicals that are added to processed foods that increase your awareness and prevent your longevity. I implore you all to buy non-fluoride dental products and drink only water that you know is fresh. It's true that calcium fluoride is an organically occurring compound and harmless in small doses. But the sodium fluoride that is used in dental products and water supplies is a toxic waste. It is a byproduct of aluminium production, and it does not prevent tooth decay. It inhibits brain function and promotes docility in the subject. Very notably, fluoride was first used by the Russians in mind-control experiments conducted on prisoners in the gulags, and later by Nazis in the death camps. It was well noted by both groups that prisoners who drank fluoridated water were much more docile and easier to control than other prisoners.
Fluoride compounds are also the active ingredients in most antidepressant drugs such as Prozac, clearly demonstrating its ability to reduce aggression and motivation in people. It has absolutely no biological or health benefits at all, and it does nothing whatsoever to prevent tooth decay. In fact, it causes dental fluorosis, yellowing of the teeth, and pitting of the enamel. If you seriously think fluoride actually does have some health benefits, the next time you're out shopping, I challenge you to pick up a packet of any brand of rat poison you care to name and look at what it contains. Quite often you will find that there is only one ingredient, sodium fluoride. It has also been very well noted that a person under the influence of such a chemical is always completely oblivious to the fact. The ability of fluoride to do this is not some internet myth as many would claim or have you believe. It is the absolute truth. Yet even now, and despite the clear results shown in the latest fluoride studies, as more people begin to awaken and begin to question the situation the world is in, the more governments are seeking to combat this awakening by undertaking the increased fluoridation of their water supplies, touting dental health as the reason. But nothing could be further from the truth.
I will continue to speak out, and the more this issue is covered up and swept under the carpet, the more I will speak out. My goal is to stop water fluoridation.
How far can they control my mind?
The second, and perhaps the most important tool that is used to keep people in check and prevent them from ever becoming truly aware, is television. Television is the greatest and most all-pervasive hypnotist and propaganda tool ever conceived. TV teaches people what to think, but not how to think. And TV has given modern humans an utterly false perception of society, of the world, and of each other. Through TV, the power elite have succeeded in creating a distracted, misinformed, divided, and class-driven society suffering historical amnesia and completely oblivious to the true realities of their surroundings. And all of these people view themselves as truly informed and are very quick to berate and ridicule anyone who offers them an alternate perspective. Subsequently, through the ideas put into their heads by TV and through a TV-driven obsession with the collecting of meaningless trinkets, fashions and possessions that the TV tells them defines who they are as people, the power elite have also managed to rob most of the common man of their wealth, their lands, their skills, their education and their history. But most importantly, it has robbed people of their ability to think critically and objectively. And that is exactly what television was designed to do and exactly why it was invented. Every television set is also specifically designed to emit alpha waves. These can be clearly seen as a series of horizontal lines that run across the screen from top to bottom at regular intervals when using a camera to film an operating TV set, but they cannot be detected by the naked eye. These regular lines are not simply a normal part of the functioning of your picture tube. They are there for a particular reason, and they travel across the screen at a predetermined and very specific pace. How often have you seen someone sit at a TV and say, "I don't like this program," and yet they sit there and watch it anyway? How often have you done it yourself? It is because these horizontal lines are there to generate these hypnotic alpha waves. Alpha waves place you into a trance-like state as you are told what to think by scripted newsreaders, and told what to buy, what to wear, where to go, and always kept otherwise distracted by sport, meaningless celebrity gossip, and a barrage of sex and entertainment, nowadays ever more frequently punctuated by messages of fear and warnings of imminent terror. These alpha waves produced by your TV set affect your electrical field even if you are not watching it. The TV merely has to be on. They become addictive as your body becomes used to the energy field, and many people would simply feel unable to cope without the daily fix of their favorite TV show. Then this hypnotic state carries on throughout the day as people work robot-like at their given tasks, usually discussing whatever the television taught them with their co-workers. Often people think they are discussing their own thoughts, but when the conversation is really analyzed, it's usually not. It's about what show they watched last night, or sport, or something they learned from the Discovery Channel, their feelings towards the opposite sex, or perhaps something like the war on terror. And whether they realize it or not, what they are talking about and 98% of what they think they know about anything at all has been taught to them by the television or by print media that is wholly owned and controlled by the very same six people who own all the TV stations. That's right, six people. 60 years ago, the media in the Western world was run by 86 small corporations who all competed to deliver the best and most informative news. Today, it is run as a well-oiled, very streamlined and tightly controlled machine by just six, who now control all major Western mainstream television and print media. And with the current rate of corporate growth, that number is set to soon drop to three. This has set an extremely dangerous precedent, as it means that all televised and mainstream print media is now controlled by very, very few people. For a better and more informed perspective, obtain your news online from one of the many emerging independent websites and go to many sites from different countries and sources to compare the same story from a variety of perspectives. You have been told that the internet is an unreliable source of information, and it is true that there are many bogus websites. But there is also a lot of very reliable information from very reliable sources, if you look in the right places. And remember, the ones who are telling you the thousands of independent websites who have opposing views to the mainstream shouldn't be trusted. Number only six. It is just that it is those six who control all major media. So those six are able to control most of what information gets to the general public and how such information is presented. It must also be duly considered that all of these six media corporations have extremely close ties to major financial institutions and arms manufacturers. Such a conflict of interests immediately poses huge questions regarding the objectivity and reliability of any information presented by these organizations. And if that were not bad enough, each one of these six corporations gets their news from only one of two sources: Reuters or the Associated Press. These two organizations serve as an international news pool and channel all information down to the networks. Only Reuters actually owns the Associated Press, and Reuters itself is wholly owned by the Rothschilds. This is why there is never any negative press about the World Bank or the international banking cartels reported to the people by the mainstream media. It is why the majority of people have no idea about Codex Alimentarius or the real effects of fluoride, and simply do not know how the world and its corrupt money system is really run.
There's a method to their madness. There's really not much method to yours, because you're operating from a place of ignorance. You don't even recognize half the weapons that they use against you. And some of them seem so insignificant that you don't even try.
We're developing a society because of all of these different toxins known to affect brain function. We're seeing a society that not only has a lot more people of lower IQ, but a lot fewer people of higher IQ. In other words, a dumbing down, a chemical dumbing down of society. So everyone's sort of mediocre. That leaves them dependent on government because they can't excel. We have these people of lower IQ who are totally dependent. Then we have this mass of people who are going to believe anything they're told because they can't really think clearly. And very few people of very high IQ who have good cognitive function who can figure this all out. And that's what they want. So, you know, you can kind of piece it together as to why they are so insistent in spending so many hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda money to dumb down society.
The world faces an enormous food crisis right now.
He who controls food controls
the world.
Mankind is facing a massive threat. But it is not the threat of global warming or the threat of terrorism. It comes in the form of an insidious set of food standards known as Codex Alimentarius. This legislation brings with it the control of all food and effectively criminalizes nutrition. This is the most pressing plan of the elite, and it is a plan that is already well underway. Indeed, many of these standards have already been adopted throughout the world. Through Codex, the elite have managed to either phase out or take control of all vitamin and nutrient companies. They've introduced deadly toxins into people's diets and purposely created nutrient-deficient foods through the control and genetic manipulation of world seed stocks. And they have already reclassified many nutrients as toxins. As one example of this, in February 2009, under Codex guidelines, the government of Thailand passed legislation forbidding the cultivation of a number of useful and medicinal herbs, including turmeric, chili, and ginger, by reclassifying these plants as hazardous substances. The global implementation of Codex Alimentarius becomes effective between December 2009 and February 2010. This will effectively condemn select sections of the global population to death through the forced consumption of toxic and nutrient-deficient foods. Depopulation is high on the globalist agenda. It is happening right now, right before your eyes. They are doing it in the Middle East with wars and starvation, and in Western countries with food toxins, water toxins, and aerial spraying. The underground seed vaults being constructed around the world are not to protect the world's seeds from any coming catastrophe. They are to protect the genetically pure and wholesome seed stock of the elite in order to provide them with clean, nutrient-rich food for years to come, and to keep the supply out of the hands of the people, who will be fed nutrient-devoid, genetically modified foods designed to kill them. But slowly, so that people don't notice it being done. If we allow Codex Alimentarius to be implemented worldwide, it is expected that in the first 3 years, 3 billion people will die from preventable diseases and malnutrition alone. Please understand that this is a plan to depopulate at least 80% of the world, and that most likely includes you. And no, this is not a joke, and it is not some wild conspiracy theory. It is the absolute truth. And this matter seriously needs to be addressed. All the information regarding this is available in the public domain. Though, of course, you are not hearing it being reported by the mainstream media, due to the simple fact that the money cartels who are implementing the plan own the mainstream media. There are an enormous amount of people who have been trying to warn you about this, but the people are kept distracted by any and every means conceivable to distract them. Distracted by taxes, by sex, by crime, by media propaganda, by sport, body image, fashion, meaningless celebrity gossip, by war, the threat of terrorism, global warming, by TV, TV, and more TV. Bringing this information to the public is the most important and challenging task humanity has ever been faced with. This time, what is at stake is our global survival, and it is a situation that we cannot allow to be ignored.
Here's what we can do to change the world right now, to a better ride,
Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which has lived many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
The subject matter that has been presented to you in this film may at first seem overwhelming, and it is very likely difficult to come to terms with. It is important to understand that the information has not been presented in order to instill fear, but rather to raise an awareness of what is truly happening in our world. It is not the time for despair at this information, but rather it is an opportunity for new hope. But should we fail to act on this information, then the world that we are allowing to be created for our children may well be a world that would not be worth living in. The reality is that this world does not have to be this way at all. It does not have to be heading in the direction it is heading. People do not have to live in a never-ending sea of self-generating debt. Wars do not have to be fought. And children do not have to starve. This has been unfolding for many, many years, but the people are kept distracted by the sign, so, for the most part, they haven't yet noticed. Whatever your perception of this reality is, you need to understand that a clear and present situation exists on this planet. It is happening right now, and it requires your urgent attention. Can you see how this has been done? Can you see the reality that we have been collectively taught as whole societies to ignore everything around us and to focus our attentions on the collecting of as much money as possible from either working for or profiting from another human being, and then to use it to buy as many baubles and trinkets as we can in order to gain more status in our society? And we have been convinced by television that such pursuits are actually the meaning of life. The ruling elite understand this, and they know that if you can control the emotions and the beliefs of enough of the population, you can control the entire species and quite literally create whatever reality you desire. And they have used our energy to create the world we now inhabit. The key to addressing this situation is to understand your own potential and to understand the true nature of energy. This is truly how it works. The situation we are now facing has occurred simply because most people are unaware of the facts. For the only information most people receive is what they are told by their newspapers or by television. And you can rest assured that the mainstream media will never inform people as to the real facts surrounding any of these issues, or make people aware that a matter may even be up for debate. So we very much recommend that you distribute this information to as many people as you are able, because the time for talk really is over. What is truly needed at this time is for the good people of the world to act, and to act now. Indeed, it is up to all of us to spread the truth. And you need not be afraid or feel alone in doing so, because a new awareness is growing among the people. This awakening is far more powerful than any system on earth, and more people are waking up every day. Those who are awakening are spreading the word, as we all should do, as often and as loudly as we can. The masses who are still unaware of the truth really must be woken up to what is occurring. It is potentially the most important issue humanity has ever faced. Ignore corrupt legislation, such as the introduction of Codex Alimentarius. Go out of your way to grow organic gardens and encourage others to do the same. Understand that it is our birthright to have healthy food, fresh water, and clean air. And this birthright must be protected at all costs. Such legislation infringes upon this birthright. Therefore, it is void. It is no law, and it is entitled to no obedience. It's very important for people to realize that it is we, the people, who are sovereign. The only power that government actually has over us is the power that we ourselves grant to them. Understand the power of yourself and the power of your community. It is the power of a unified population that the elite most fear, because such a population cannot be so easily controlled. They know this, and they know that were the people of the world ever to unite, the entire system of control would come crashing down like a house of cards. It is very important that your mind be clear in order to address these issues. I implore you to avoid toxic substances such as heavily processed foods, diet soft drinks, aspartame, artificial sweeteners, and fluoride, and to drink only water that you know is fresh. And turn your TV off, and leave it off. After even a month of no TV, you will be surprised at how much better and how much healthier you feel. And get back in touch with nature. We have now reached a turning point in history. The veil of secrecy that has always surrounded the system by which this world is run is now at last being lifted. Now is the time for the people of the world to look after each other and not the system. It really is that simple. It's time for each of us to realize our true potential as human beings. It's time to forget the imaginary restraints and limitations that have been placed before us by institutionalized teachings and to look at the whole spectrum. Realize the divisions that supposedly exist between us are an illusion. Look behind it to the real world. For it matters not who you are, what country you are in, or where you are from. It makes no difference whether you are black or white or Christian or Muslim or Jew. It makes no difference at all what your beliefs are, because we are all people and we are all one. The reality is that this situation is a global one, and it affects each of us equally. It is seriously time for the people to understand the truth of this and to approach the world and each other in a state of love rather than in a state of fear. It's time for you to tap into the source and realize your own potential. And it's time for us all to collectively stand together and address the root cause of the problem. The key is in love and unity among all mankind. Through conscious co-creation, we can very easily build a better world, because the ones we have been waiting for are ourselves. Do not wait for your government or your media to address these issues for you. The one who must address them is you. Come to the realization that you are not merely pawns in the game of life. You are the mover of the pieces. So stop following and start leading. Embrace your true power and unite as one human family. Feel the connection you have to all people and to all life. Set aside your differences. Center yourself in a state of love and forgiveness. This is truly the greatest power and the greatest tool that we have. There truly are no limits to what we can create, and it is up to each of us to change this world for the better. What is occurring at this moment in history is an evolution in human consciousness. So seize the opportunity, because the evolution is now. Do not accept any RFID tracking cards from a criminal government. Do not accept your water being poisoned with fluoride. It's time to wake up.
All right, so what I want to do now, everybody, is share with you from the Agni Purana. Now, I was able to research this, and I found in a book that this Purana, written by the fire god Agni, was actually Ashtar. In some books, this is referred to as the Ashtar Vidya, or that translates as Ashtar's knowledge. And the fire god would have been Ashtar, and we can see that he shoots beams of fire out of his palms. That's the violet flame, and that's coming from his heart. Agni, the fire god, is the first son of Brahma, and some other sons of Brahma are Sanat Kumara, Sanaka Kumara, Sananda Kumara, and Agni wrote this book, and most of the copies are available only in Sanskrit. If you go online and you look up Agni Purana, you're going to find copies of it, but it's only 41 pages, and it's a summary of the 900-page book. In the actual copy, there are illustrations, and those can't be found online unless you look at the Sanskrit version. There was another book written by a scholar on Hindu traditions, and he extrapolated and explained how they had figured out that the Agni Purana itself, the first time it was written down in recorded form, was over 2 million years ago. So when I read it to you, it may read like Hindu scripture, but I wouldn't think of it that way if I were you. This version is translated from Sanskrit, so there's Sanskrit words in it. And it's going to, it refers to the gods of the time as Krishna and Vishnu, but those are the same Greek gods that were Apollo and Zeus, and Juno was Mother Sekhmet. who was also known as Hera. So the Greek names and the Roman names and the Hindu names are different, but they're all the same people riding across the chariots in the sky. And so when the fire god came down from his UFO and landed and taught Visheshtra these teachings, then he sat around and told the rishis these teachings, and eventually in time, the whole thing was written down. So the copy I have, I bought. I had to import it from New Delhi, India. It's very rare. It's hard to find. And so I'm reading my copy. It's a rare copy. This is a used book that I just sent away for because I was so stoked that I had Ashtar's book that I could literally buy it and read it. And you cannot find it in English on the internet. I looked at university sites and library sites, and I looked the world over and I couldn't find it, so I had to buy it. So I hope you enjoy this. I'm going to read from all four sections because it's such a rare treat. And so I hope you just sit back and relax because you can't get this anywhere else. Enjoy. This first part I'm going to read you. Just trying to adjust my lighting here. This first part I'm going to read you is called Mode of Purification of the Principle of Peace. So this is Ashtar speaking, and he's explaining to the rishis what to do to get their bodies in the mode of the principle of peace. If we really take these advisories seriously and apply them to our lives, it is the true Rishi God on Earth teachings of how to live our lives, how to live pure lives and save the planet, not kill each other, and have peace. This was written since before the last flood. I hope it gets followed this time. Chapter 87, Mode of Purification of the Principle of Peace. And Ashtar said, the beatific knowledge should be united now with the principle of peace as laid down. The two principles lie in the principle of peace. Bahavasvara and Sadajiva are spoken as these two letters, Ha and Kesa. Remember, this is translated from the Sanskrit. If it was translated from another language, those would be different words. So don't let that throw you off. The Rudras are equal in number to the worlds. They are as follows. Valiant, time, little, free from impurity, auspicious, heavy, unstained form, auspicious to himself, cause of brilliance, Lord of the 30 gods, representing the 30, known as the time, minute, and Lord of the Lotus. These are the Rudas firmly established in the principle of peace. Obsession to the one who pervades the ether, to the form which manifests as the ether, to the all-pervasive, to the auspicious one, to the endless, to one who has no matter, to one who is not having any hold, to the firm one, to the eternal, to the one firmly established in the seat of yoga, to the eternal yogin, and one who partakes of such meditation of votaries. They're the 12 terms used in their invocation. The preceptor should meditate with the two protective mantras known as Bindu and Upadraka. The two occult nerves, Alambusa and Siasa, and the two vital winds, Karakara and Kumaka. in the subtle phase. The organs of the skin and hand are considered as the two senses of perception for this beatific principle. The attributes of touch and sound are the only two attributes. Lord Siva is the only cause of these. Having contemplated upon the different worlds, which are located in the beatific principle of peace as the fourth state of consciousness in which the soul gets united with the Supreme Being, the preceptor should do the act of gentle beating, division, entry, and union. Having drawn the beatific principle of peace from the string of the face, it should be held by the preceptor. Having merged in it in one's own self, the beatific principle should be held and projected in the receptacle. O Lord, I am initiating this disciple, desirous of release from bondage, subject to your control. You have to be beneficial to him. The appeal should thus be made. After having invoked the divine parents and doing the gentle beating of the disciple, etc., and collecting the soul force, it should be united with its preceptor's own soul. Having invoked the divine parents as before by showing mudra, known as ubhava, formation with fingers denoting generation, it should be located in the womb of the goddess by repeating the principal mantra of the god preceded by the mantras of the heart. A corporeal frame of the beatitude should be done with the repetition of mantra of the heart 5 times. The mantra of the head should be repeated for bringing it into being. Its authority is accomplished by the mantra of the tuft and enjoyment of the mantra of the amour. Its repose is accomplished by the repetition of the mantra of weapons. The purification of the currents is achieved by that of Lord Siva. In the case of purification of the principle, the rites of Garbhadhana, etc., should be done in the same manner as before. The thread is untied with that of the amour. Having completed the purification thus, one should repeat the mantras 100 times. In order to compensate the mitigation of the power of mantras, 5 oblations should be made with the mantra of the weapon. After having untied the thread, it should be severed with a knife by the repetition of the mantra of the weapon 7 times, just as the bondage is cut off with the principal mantra. The mantra is Om Hum to the thread of the beatific principle of peace, Ha Hum Fat, after having untied and made into a circle. The cord should be placed as before in the sacrificial ladle filled with clarified butter with the repetition of the mantra. The god should bid adieu, and the crescent-like soul should be united with the Lord Rudra. Then it must be united with one's owner, the preceptor's soul, in the prescribed way. The same should be united with the thread by showing pure Abhava Mudra, formation with fingers denoting generation. The drop of nectar should be put on the head of the disciple with the repetition of the principal mantra. Having taken leave of the divine parents after worshipping them with flowers, etc., the preceptor should offer the final oblation to the fire as a concluding rite. Even here, the acts of gentle beating, etc., should be done as before. The distinctive feature is the use of its principal mantra. Thus, purification of the beatific principle of peace is done without any impediment. Okay, now I want to read to you an explanation of what the book is. These are 4 different books, so let me find it. All right. This is how I was able to identify that Ashtar had really had originally taught these, and that this one, Agni Purana, is named for him and him alone. This is the very ending, and it explains what this is. Hence, O Vyasa, this Purana making everything explicit should always be read to the disciples in the company of the sages, such as Sukha, and others who are desirous of hearing the Agniya Purana. Agniya, in other references, is referring to Ashtar. Read and contemplated would be auspicious and confer enjoyment and emancipation, obeisance to that fire god who has sung the Purana. O Sutta, redactor, this Agniya Purana, which is of the form of para and aparavidya, and the supreme position was sung by the sage Vasistha. Vasistha is the one who Ashtar gave a one-on-one teaching to by coming down from, beaming down from the UFO. So this was not an incarnation of Ashtar on Earth. Vasistha in days of yore, and it has been expounded to you by me. The fortunate ones would attain a form difficult to get. Those who meditate upon this Agniya Purana, the Brahman, who would reach Lord Hari, that's another name for Vishnu. Those who seek knowledge would get knowledge. Those who wish for kingdom would obtain kingdom. Those without progeny get children. Those without resort would reach a resort. Those who seek fortune and those who desire for liberation get them. Those who transcribe and those who cause it to be transcribed become sinless and gain fortune. O Sutta, think of the form of Agniya Purana, expounded by Sukha, Pelia, and others. There is no doubt that you would gain enjoyment and emancipation. You recite the Purana to the disciples and devotees. That's true, right? That's what Ashtar's come here to do, to emancipate us, to give us our freedom back, and help us gain the desires of our hearts by having peace. I have heard the Agni Purana with respect by the favor of Vyasa. The Agni Purana is a manifestation of the Supreme Brahman. You and other sages, such as Sanaka and others, had worshipped Lord Hari in the Nemissu forest. They were steadfast. The Agni Purana is spoken by Agni and conforms to the Vedas. This Purana, endowed with the two sorts of Brahmavidya, confers enjoyment and emancipation. There is nothing richer in substance than this. Nothing is a better friend than this. There is no greater work than this. There is no better course than this. There is no greater trustees than this. There is no greater scripture than this. There is no superior knowledge than this. That's how they describe these books that Ashtar wrote. And this is what is taught to the rishis in India today. Okay, the next section I want to read from the Agni Purana is a description of the lunar rings. This is a kind of a kind of a genealogy like they have in Genesis, but these are the UFO commanders that they're naming. Check it out. I won't read all of it. I'll just read a brief capture so you can get a feeling for what was written here. It's fascinating. The fire god said, that's Ashtar, I shall describe the lunar race. It would destroy the sin of one who reads it. Brahma was born from the navel lotus of Lord Vishnu, the sage. Atri was the son of Brahma. Soma was born from Atri. Soma performed the Raja Suya sacrifice and gave away the suzerainty over the three worlds as the fees for the priest. When the final bathing was finished, the wives of the mortals who desired to look at his beautiful form served him, being tormented by the arrows of the god of love. Goddess Lakshmi deserted Lord Narayana, Sinavali, Diyuti, Pushti, Prabha, Kuhu, Kirti, Vasu, and Jyoti, respectively deserted Kardama, Vihavasu, the undecaying Jyata, Prabhakara, Avisman, the husband, Jayanta, Marsha Kalyapa, and husband Nandi, and entertain Soma alone then. Soma also bestowed his affection on them as if they were his wives. The husbands of these women were not able to curse him or punish him with the weapons, although he had done a misdeed, as he had obtained suzerainty over the seven worlds by means of a penance. So what are they talking about here? They're talking about the gods who went to Earth and mated with the human women and shared their DNA with them. And Mother Sekhmet always mentions to us that the gods did things wrong back then. That's why the world was flooded again. And this is telling us that story. It's the same story in the Book of Enoch. It's in our Bible, and it's in the Hindu Puranas. Being influenced by their submission, his mind faltered. Soma seduced hastily the glorious Tara, the wife of Braspati, the preceptor of the Celestials. They're saying, you know, these are the ETs. And thus insulted the son of Aguras, Rapati. On account of this incident, there was the battle, well known as Tara Kamaya, involving the Celestials, between the Celestials and demons, causing great destruction to the world. This was the war where there was fighting in the skies. The spacecraft were flying around and shooting beams of fire, lightning, and nuclear weapons, and bombing the earth and bombing each other in the skies. This story is told in several of the creation stories as well as the Bible. Brahma intervened and prevailed upon Usanas, preceptor of the demons, to shed his wrath, and entrusted Tara to the care of Aguras, who was Braspati. Guru Braspati, finding her pregnant, said to her, "Shed the child in the womb." The child that was delivered was effulgent and said, "I am the son of the moon." Thus Buddha was born from Soma. Puruvas was his son. The nymph Urvasi deserted heaven and was enamored of him. O great sage, the king 59 years with her. There was only one fire in days of yore, which was made into three by him. Puruvas practiced yoga and reached the world of the Gandharavas. Urvasi, wife of Puruvas, gave birth to the kings Ayas, Dradyas, Asvayas, Ganayas, Ditraman, Vasu, Divi, Jata, and Satayulyas. Okay, you get the gist. It goes on and on. But I just wanted to show you how Ashtar was explaining over 2 million years ago the same story we have in Enoch. Same exact story. He also told that same story when he was Pakovutan. He wrote that story down in the Popol Vuh. That's what the Popol Vuh is about also. Lots of people read the Popol Vuh today and they read about cheetahs and the House of Swords and they were playing ball in the courtyard, and everyone says, "What is this story about?" And, well, Ashtar very clearly said those were stories about the Orion Wars, and it was also stories about what it was like living in the antimatter universe before we incarnated into human bodies. It's all the same story being told again and again, hoping that mankind won't kill themselves off again. So let me see this other section. I wanted to share with you this part because Ashtar explains about the mode for reciting the Gayatri and its greatness. The Gayatri mantra is something that is revered in India as maybe one of the most important mantras you can do. So let me read with you quickly what this said. The fire god said, "One who knows the syllable Om is verily a yogin and the Lord Hari. Hence one should practice the syllable Om. That is the essence of all sacred syllables and the giver of all things. Remember, in John 1:1 in the Bible it says, the word was God and God was with the word." I'm saying it wrong. What John was talking about was the word Om. Om is the beginning sound of all creation. It is the divine blueprint. The pranava Om is known to be the first in the application of all the sacred syllables. Hence the act which becomes complete with that will not get completed with any other syllable. There are three great unmutilated Bharatras syllables which are preceded by the syllable Om. The three-footed Savitra, Gayatri, should be known as the face of Lord Brahma. One who unwearily repeats these every day 3 years reaches the supreme Brahman, becoming the wind and embodying the sky. I think that means you can levitate and fly around and go out of body and maybe teletransport, right? Just have to sing Om every day for 3 years. That's how sacred it is. The one syllable is the supreme Brahma and pranayama, control of the birth, in the supreme penance. There is nothing greater than Savrita. Truthfulness excels silence. The repetition of the Gayatri 7 times would destroy one's sins and 10 times would convey the person to heaven. That goddess, repeated 20 times, would convey him to the abode of Lord Shiva. One would cross the ocean of mundane existence by repeating it 108 times. The Gayatri excels the repetition of Kudra, of Rudra, and Kusmanda, the mantras in its merit. There is nothing excelling Gayatri for repetition. There is nothing equal to Vyatras for doing ablutions. The quarter of the hymn, or half of it, or half the hymn, or the whole hymn being repeated, purifies one of the sins, such as killing of a Brahmin, drinking of wine, stealing of gold, or cohabitating with the preceptor's wife. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Gayatri, I just want to play it briefly for you. Just let me get it up here. It'll just take a second. Oh, sorry, 1 second. Here it is. I'm just going to play a few seconds of it. Maybe you've heard it before. Thank you. Okay, so that's the mantra that Ashtar is referring to in the book. In English, an interpretation is this. O God, giver of life, remover of all pain and sorrows, bestower of happiness, the creator of the universe, thou art most luminous, adorable, and destroyer of sins. We meditate upon thee. May thou inspire, enlighten, and guide our intellect in the right direction. It can also be known as the right understanding, or to the holy seat, or to the universe. And basically what it's saying is that you are asking God to merge with you, and it helps you remember that you are God. And so he's saying, when you recognize this and you meditate on it, that's what brings you those austere provisions. All right, everybody. So what I want to do now is I want to give you a presentation that is fascinating about the UFOs on the moon. And afterwards, I'm going to read to you from Ashtar's three books. And you will find knowledge there that you never knew existed from Ashtar. And that'll be a lot of fun. So let's take a break from reading right now and enjoy this. This is UFO Moon Rising by Jose Escamilla, and it is on YouTube for your enjoyment. And Jose is a researcher for Roswell Crash and UFOs for a very long time. I hope you enjoy it.
O presents the news from Washington. Here is Bob Pierpoint. Another larger Sputnik with a dog named Curly aboard is now whirling around the Earth 1,000 miles out in space. The Russians launched an 1,100-pound satellite late last night, and so far both Sputnik 2 and its canine passenger are reported doing well.
The dramatic achievements in space which occurred in recent weeks should have made clear to us all, as did the Sputnik in 1957, the impact of this adventure on the minds of men everywhere who are attempting to make a determination of which road they should take.
Radio Moscow started broadcasting time schedules for its latest satellite a short while ago with the announcement that Sputnik 2 will pass over Washington, D.C. in just a few minutes from now. Dr. J. Allen Hynek, well-known associate director of the Smithsonian Observatory at Cambridge, Massachusetts, was asked if the half-ton weight of Sputnik 2 indicated the Russians might have a war rocket powerful enough to reach this continent from the Soviet Union. It certainly indicates they have the capabilities of launching an intercontinental ballistic missile, replied Dr. Hynek.
Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth.
Dr. John S. Reinhardt, also with the Smithsonian Observatory, commented after studying figures on the new Soviet satellite, I firmly believe the Russians could reach the moon in a few days.
I believe we should go to the moon. But I think every citizen of this country, as well as the members of the Congress, should consider the matter carefully. Every scientist, every engineer, every serviceman, every technician, contractor, and civil servant gives his personal pledge that this nation will move forward with the full speed of freedom in the exciting adventure of space. We go into space because whatever mankind must undertake, free man must fully share.
On January 25, 1994, the Deep Space Program science experiment known as Clementine was launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base. Clementine was able to deliver more than 1.8 million digital images between February 26 and April 22, 1994. These images were quickly accessible to the general public on the World Wide Web. In 1994, President Clinton cited the Clementine mission as one of the major national achievements in aeronautics in space.
By going to the Clementine Lunar Image Browser 1.5, you can find many images that have been smudged or blurred to keep you from seeing what is there. Click on the desired resolution section and choose 1 pixel equals 1 kilometer option. Then by going to the image size in pixels option, choose 768 by 768. You are now ready to see for yourself a huge object on the surface of the moon. On the moon map, you will easily see a dot on the top of this crater and on the lower left. Click on the black dot on top of the crater and a close-up image of this section appears in the browser. What you see is a huge object resting at the top of this crater. It appears to be a large machine or perhaps a large spaceship or a motor of some kind. You can clearly see this photograph has been smudged over and blurred so we cannot see the details. This little gem was discovered and brought to the attention of moon researchers all over the world by Joseph P. Skipper on May 28, 2004. I decided to hire an imaging forensics expert to take this photo and to try and remove the blurring to reveal what is underneath. Jim Horrocks, an imaging forensics expert who has worked with the Los Angeles Police Department, was sent this photo, and his findings were written in a report he submitted to the production. First of all, the astounding measurements he made reveal an object that is 10 times the size of Los Angeles. 10 times the size. This in itself is an incredible detail about the size of this object. By using Adobe Photoshop and some of the filters available within the program, we were able to see more of the details that were lost due to the blurring applied by whoever did this for NASA and the Clementine Mission Archives. This enormous object seems to be some form of a machine or possibly a spacecraft. In all the enhancements made independently, it appears there may have been what appears to be a giant humanoid wearing a jumpsuit and possibly working on the front portion of this contraption. This may or may not be a giant humanoid. Perhaps the shadows seem to reflect something of a human form. We will never know until NASA releases this photograph, unblurred and with the clarity available for us to see. By clicking on the new lunar map now available, you will now see that the same crater is available for viewing in all its clarity. There is no object there anymore, and there is no smudging of anything near or within the crater. We have to ask ourselves, if there is nothing on the moon to suggest alien moon bases, strange structures, machines, and possible civilizations thriving there, then why has there been a deliberate tampering of these and thousands of images we will present here in this film? One of the many challenges I had to deal with in making this film was how the structures on the moon were to be presented. Unfortunately, most of all the Apollo and orbiter photos are black and white. Many photos are in low resolution, so zooming into them for a closer look causes the photos to blur and become pixelated, making it impossible to see details of what's on the surface. While I was designing a poster for the film in Photoshop, I decided that I did not want a black and white photo in the background of the poster. So I decided to color the background image I was using so I would have a full-color poster for the film. I took some full-color aerial photos of landscapes that closely resemble the distances of the moon's surface, turned them into black and white photos, and compared them to the moon photo I was about to airbrush. Noticing the different shades of the aerials from Earth and the colors represented, I then started making a color palette in Photoshop. All I did was airbrush the colors onto the moon photo as they appeared on Earth. But the structures and other objects on the moon revealed themselves. I was so overwhelmed at the results, I have now colorized over 247 photos. Now that I had come up with a format and a routine for colorizing the moon, I decided to gather the most famous Apollo moon anomaly photos that researchers from all over the world had been presenting for years and decided to colorize them. This is one of the many original NASA photos that has some very unique anomalies, especially here in this area. This is what it looks like after we bring up the contrast to eliminate the brightness applied to distort the image. And this is what it looks like after applying my colorizing process to it. So remember, these are colors and tones I used from Earth photography applied to the moon's surface. With Earth colors applied, you can see all the details with depth perception as never before. By painting the moon with Earth colors and tones, we can now see what has been there all along for us to view. I got started in this probably in the mid-1990s, listening to Hoagland on the old Coast to Coast AM radio program with Art Bell, and he was talking about the stuff that he'd found on the moon, and some images and some things that clearly appeared to be structures that were very anomalous, and he was noting that there were thousands upon thousands of photographs that had been taken of the moon by the various unmanned probes and the astronauts that had orbited the moon, and he said, you know, Art, anybody can do this. And what I realized is, A, I'm anybody. B, I think I understand the arguments. I'm an engineer by trade, so aerospace engineer, so I may not be an architect, but I certainly know structure when I see it. And I started looking at the evidence that he presented, and I just got fascinated by it. I created a web page called the Lunar Anomalies homepage, which still exists, and it was all dedicated to stuff on the moon.
The Hubble telescope has taken the most incredible photography of deep space and far off in the vast universe. When you see these spectacular scenes, you can't help but wonder how many others live out there. So when NASA was asked by scientists and astronomers when the Hubble telescope would be used in photographing the moon, NASA's reply was that because the moon was too bright, it would be impossible to get accurate photography of the moon. The first photo was released from the Hubble Space Telescope in 1999. Needless to say, the scientists and astronomers were not too pleased at how NASA had deliberately lied to them. When I heard about this photograph, I thought for sure we would see the moon in full color. But of all the photos taken by the Hubble telescope of the moon, they are in black and white. After colorizing all these photos, you can't help but learn the moon's layout. After all, it is a small planet compared to Earth.
Prepare yourself for an incredible expedition as we now take you back to the moon on a voyage filled with mystery and secrecy.
I'm not sure why NASA has not told us what's on the moon. In a way, they have told us because the pictures are there, and there's hundreds of them. So anybody can do what I did and go look at the pictures and enlarge them and see what there is.
NASA has been there, but we haven't been back since 1972, and you kind of sit there and wonder why that is. It's our closest celestial neighbor in the heavens. You can see it every night when you walk outside, and really there's so much mystery about it still to this day. Many people seem to think that the Apollo program answered a lot of these questions, and in many ways it did, but we, the general public, have never been privy to any of those answers.
Is there already somebody there? And is there even a secret space program that we don't know about, that maybe even NASA doesn't know about, that's been to the moon and back and using very advanced technology?
A cover story that's based entirely upon the premise that there is absolutely no life there, and that there's no life to be found, past, present, at all. That's simply not the case.
So I certainly believe that some of the stuff that we're finding on the moon may be alien, extraterrestrial in origin. It may be ruined, ancient, abandoned extraterrestrial ruins. Some of it may be active, and some of it, in fact, may be our own stuff.
I don't think there's any possibility that NASA is not aware of the civilizations on the moon and the structures. They're very obvious, easy to see.
They are in contact with some of these extraterrestrial life forms, and They don't want you to know about it.
There was the guy that hacked into the NASA database and found some listings of non-terrestrial officers.
NASA may have made a deal with beings up there to not reveal their civilization. But then again, the pictures have the evidence. It's all in pictures anyway.
The whole purpose of the cover-up is to prevent we, the plebeian masses of this planet, from gaining the appreciation that there is indeed extraterrestrial life out there, intelligent extraterrestrial life. And this is life that the government is very well aware of. The governments around the world, it's certainly not a U.S. issue. They're very well aware of it.
Because you've been lied to, you've been robbed of something that you deserve, which is to know what your true history is and what your true significance is in this world.
I really don't think people realize how deep the lie goes, how big it is, how unbelievable the cover-up is. This truly is the greatest story ever denied. Secret never told. It is the most monumental cover-up in human history. And hopefully the public will take a movie like this and will begin to open up some doors, begin to open up some windows to the truth, whether it's from the government, whether it's from other insiders who can now come forward and begin to tell their stories of what they did and their involvement in this cover-up to get the truth out there. I think the world's ready for it. And hopefully a movie like this will push that forward a little bit and speed the process up.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
By playing around with these images, using modern software techniques, some of the results really are eye-opening. And again, it really comes back to, you've got to ask yourself the question, why do NASA or any of the other space agencies or any of the major observatories, why will they not show you any of the new adaptive optics imagery of the moon? They simply won't show it to you. They don't have any, they claim.
A report was prepared under contracts with NASA by the Brookings Institute, Washington, D.C. The report outlines the need to investigate the possible social consequences of an extraterrestrial discovery and to consider whether such a discovery should be kept from the public in order to avoid political change and a possible devastating effect on scientists themselves due to the discovery that many of their own most cherished theories could be at risk.
And it says in there that you should seriously consider covering that information up, because it may in fact lead to what it calls the disintegration of our culture because of the tremendous cultural impact, the shock that it would have, especially to scientists and engineers who think, who've come to believe arrogantly, I think, that we are the top of the heap, that we are some part of some natural process and we are the dominant species. I don't think that that argument flies. I think that document is nothing more than their political and legal cover for what they've been doing. Because there is a much bigger issue that comes out here. what most people don't know is that, you know, NASA is not a civilian science agency. If you look at the actual charter under which NASA was originally put into existence, it states clearly there that NASA is an adjunct, a division of the Department of Defense, and it is beholden to the Department of Defense.
When you couple the Brookings Institute report with a document called Executive Order 10501, 10501 was a document that was specifically related to safeguarding official information in the interests of national defense. And it's important to note that the term national defense actually includes not only considerations of a military perspective, but also geoeconomic and geopolitical as well. And when you compare or take those two documents, when you take 10501 and the Brookings Institute report, right there, that lays the framework for the greatest story ever denied. That gives them legal justification to cover this up.
Speculated the moon missions were hoaxed. Perhaps some of the Apollo missions were filmed in different locations and in studios in order to conceal the incredible discoveries found on the moon. In 1979, Marie Chatelain, former chief of NASA Communications Systems, confirmed Neil Armstrong had indeed reported seeing two UFOs on the rim of a crater. The encounter was common knowledge at NASA, he revealed, but nobody has talked about it until now.
Even if you don't care what's up there, you damn sure care about the lies that are being put in place to hide what's up there. You know, whether you have the interest in the space program or the interest in what's going on over our planet's atmosphere or not, you are affected by the lies that are in place to maintain this greatest of all cover-ups. And we're talking about just a massive effort by the military-industrial complex.
Couple of nuclear weapons sent into space were destroyed by the extraterrestrials. Our government sent a nuclear weapon for explosion on the moon's surface. It was tended to, as I understand it, to assess some scientific data and reaction and so forth.
When I was a corporate manager of Fairchild Industries in 1974 through 77, I met the late Dr. Werner von Braun in early 74. At that time, von Braun was dying of cancer, but he assured me that he would live a few more years in order to tell me about the game that was being played, that game being the effort to weaponize space.
The idea of any explosion in space by any Earth government was not acceptable to the extraterrestrials, and that has been demonstrated over and over.
The strategy that Werner von Braun taught me was that first the Russians are going to be considered to be the enemy. In fact, when I met him in 74, they were the enemy.
They wanted a weapon system they could put in space that would stop a ballistic missile. That was the concept.
Then terrorists would be identified, and that was soon to follow. We heard a lot about terrorism.
Now, if that ballistic missile happened to be coming from another direction other than earthbound, could it do the same thing?
Then we were going to identify third world country crazies. We now call them nations of concern.
I have but a short time to try to convince people that we are moving in an avenue where we are going to militarize space.
The next enemy was asteroids. And the funniest one of all was against what he called aliens, extraterrestrials. That would be the final card.
As a direct result, we will become a threat to them unless we spiritually grow also.
And over and over and over, during the 4 years that I knew him, he would bring up that last card. And remember, Carol, the last card is the alien card. We're going to have to build space-based weapons against aliens. And all of it, he said, is a lie.
We put nuclear weapons out in space as a line of defense, and we was ready to blow them up if they started in.
Today, most people have come to the very clear realization, I think, that things aren't quite as you've been told, and the question then just becomes is, how big is the lie? And the truth is, it's bigger than most people can imagine. One of the great things about the NASA archive system is that at the back of many of their documents, they have both distribution and reference lists, and the distribution lists are very important. They say who that document is being forwarded to and which department and for what company. And when you begin to cull through these documents, certainly ones that deal with specific subject matter, like image enhancement, for example, you begin to see a lot of names that obviously begin to repeat. And you can very quickly determine what individuals knew what and had to have been privy to certain information just by the very nature of their job. The individual that I managed to identify and who agreed to meet with me and talk with me was a man who worked for a company called Bellcom during the 1960s and into the early 1970s. Bellcom, although many people haven't heard of it, is in many ways a company that is more responsible for landing man on the moon than NASA really was. Bellcom's a division of AT&T and Western Electric. Bellcom was around for only a decade. They were there for the specific purpose of landing man on the moon and ensuring that NASA got the job done. Meeting him was actually the most incredible 3 hours of my life, this the interview that we had. A man who I knew was in the know, a man who I'd tracked down. He wasn't in any way looking to throw this stuff out in the public eye. It was just really a matter of him recognizing that I wasn't on a total blind fishing expedition, and I'd actually figured some things out. That opened him up in a big way. He'd made the comment several times during the interview that he'd never talked about this with anyone before. It was not the kind of subject matter that you talk with anyone about. The people that were in a position to be in the know, to have at least some high level of understanding of what was really going on, these individuals are also very well aware of what their government is actually capable of.
A guard told me that he was asked to burn some photographs and not to look at them. And there was a guard, another guard guarding him, who was in green fatigues, watching him burn the photographs. And he said he was too tempted. He looked at one, and it was a picture of a UFO. And he was very descriptive. I can go into that later with anyone. He immediately was hit in the head, and he had a big gash in his forehead. He was knocked out, and he's terrified. So he would have to be protected. Another incident, I knew someone in quarantine with the Apollo astronauts. He told me that the Apollo astronauts saw crap on the moon when we landed. And that is what he told me. And he also was afraid. He said that the astronauts are told to keep this quiet. They're not allowed to talk about it. So I do want to let you know that I worked out there for a number of years, and this I ran into this. So it's not something everyone knows that works out there for a long time. My boss didn't know about it. Some people that sat right next to me didn't know about it. It's very strange because I don't know how they can do it, but they can let some people know about it and then others not. I'm willing to testify before Congress that what I'm saying is true, and thank you very much.
They know the power of these people. A lot of people ask questions like, well, how come none of these people who knew about it have ever come forward? These individuals have signed their lives away in security classification documents. And when I say sign their lives away, I mean that quite literally. I mean, these are things that if they talk about, it's off to Guantanamo Bay. This is the greatest secret in not only the United States military and the United States government, but around the world. So really, for a lot of these individuals, and there are many other investigators out there who will tell you this, that one of the only ways these individuals have to ever put the truth out is to do it through a proxy. They find another individual, or another individual finds them, and they talk a little bit about what they know. They're usually very, very careful when they talk about it because they don't want trails leading right back to them. With this gentleman, I think a great deal of his openness had to do with the fact that he knew he was dying, and he knew that he was just fed up with the government's behavior. So he was more than willing, knowing that I had understood at least a little bit of what was going on. He was much more willing to open up.
On November 20th, 1969, the Apollo 12 astronauts did an experiment with some strange results. They crashed the lunar module ascent stage into the surface of the moon. Shockwaves reverberated throughout the moon for over an hour. Some have likened this to ringing like a bell. These results were repeated during the Apollo 13 mission. However, this time the shockwaves lasted for over 3 hours. Hollow moon researchers say that this is proof that the interior of the moon was hollowed out by artificial means. MIT's Dr. Sean C. Solomon wrote, "The lunar orbiter experiments vastly improved our knowledge of the moon's gravitational field, indicating the frightening possibility that the moon might be hollow." On March 7, 1971, instruments placed on the moon by the Apollo astronauts recorded a cloud of water vapor passing over the surface. The event lasted for over 14 hours and covered an area of at least 100 square miles. The Earth is thought to be around 4.6 billion years old, while rocks from the moon were found to be around 5.3 billion years old. And the dust the rocks were found in is thought to be about a billion years older than that. This information conflicts with the theory that the moon was produced by a collision the Earth had with another body earlier in its history.
One of the things that you got to keep in mind as well when you're looking at NASA imagery is that although the sky may appear black in those frames, in many instances, when you enhance that image, you discover that there's actually an incredible amount of image detail that's just buried in the darkness of that image. But when you amplify that scene and you begin to see what's hidden there in the sky, you can begin to make out shapes. There's a few images that show structuring. And this is all done in an effort to both hide the truth, but as well to leave a bit of the truth there for you. And again, a lot of people don't want to believe they do that, but they do. That's all part of the dripping faucet technique, where they give you tiny little bits of the truth, and you can begin to fill it, put it together for yourself. One of the frames that really demonstrates the way they use this dripping faucet technique is a frame known as 20680 from the Apollo 17 mission. For 30 years, this frame was officially listed in their catalogs in the Apollo 17 photographic index as being a blank, no image data frame, a frame that has got nothing on it. While this image is most definitely sunstruck and overexposed, blank it most certainly is not.
Harrison Schmitt, created some patches for his own mission, Apollo 17, which is, again, the mission that we take this image from, these images from, and that we've seen a lot of this color effect. And what he put on it was Stonehenge and the sun. And the sun is a symbol of ancient Egyptian god Horus. There's all sorts of Egyptian mythology that runs through all the Apollo program, which is supposed to be Greek, but it ends up that there's really sort of a dual meaning to all this stuff, and it's an Egyptian. And what he's clearly saying to people is, look, these are ruins. They're a structure. This is what we're really doing on the moon. And I think what they're doing is they're trying in a subtle way to let people know, either because they remember it subconsciously or because they are deliberately trying to send us messages under the radar, that
they did not go there and pick up a bunch of rocks, but instead, what they brought back or what they were sent to investigate was ancient extraterrestrial ruins.
One of the most important things to keep in mind whenever you're looking at any NASA imagery, whether it's Apollo imagery or imagery of Mars, it doesn't really matter. Perspective is everything. We human beings down here on terra firma are afforded one perspective of the moon. We look at it, and that's what we have to look at. We don't know what the moon looks like from the side or from different oblique angles. All we have is this singular representation that we have to look at. And NASA has, in fact, gone to great lengths to ensure that the imagery that they show us of the moon's surface resembles very closely, both in photometric function as well as in angling. And the dimensional properties of the image make it appear as if it would look just like it does from Earth. One of the primary obfuscation techniques that NASA uses is to simply rotate the imagery. They insert a false horizon in their oblique imagery, so by turning these images upside down, it alters vertical objects, suddenly don't cast shadows anymore, the shadows aren't in the right places, and this technique has been used since the dawn of the space age. Since the lunar orbiter missions, since even before that with Ranger missions, to make things appear as we humans expect them to appear, because we look through a telescope here, we say, well, that's how it looks. So from the side, it probably looks like this. The reality is it doesn't. The moon is a very three-dimensional object.
Hasselblad cameras were the ones that were used by NASA to photograph everything on the moon. And the reason the Hasselblad was used is because they had registration crosshairs. Now, these registration crosshairs are there for a specific reason, okay? They're so that you can take a single photo with a single camera, so you'll be able to get distance from an object to another object because of the registration crosshairs that are built into the Hasselblad camera. These crosshairs are always in front of whatever's being photographed. Okay, this is a perfect shot of a photograph of one of the astronauts on the moon. Now here you see the crosshairs from the Hasselblad camera. Okay? You can clearly see that they are even in the darkness of space. But you can clearly see that the crosshairs are there in exactly the positions they should be. So in a lot of the false horizons, they've eliminated the crosshairs in the sky parts. And almost about 90% of the moon shots have what we call a false horizon.
In 1999, William Burroughs wrote a book called This New Ocean. It's a non-fictional account, supposedly non-fictional account, of the space race. If you look at the cover of that book, you'll notice that he has a picture of the Earth's horizon on it with the moon above. And on the cover of this book, there are two black running parallel lines that climb up from the Earth, and they pass the moon on either side, paralleling it. It's interesting when you go and look at the ISS and space shuttle imagery of the moon from low Earth orbit. When you begin to enhance those images and begin to attack the black area of the sky that appears to be solid black, and there are different filtering techniques you can use to draw that out, you begin to realize that those lines that are on the cover of this book actually are appearing in these photographs. And they don't appear once or twice. You don't see this effect once or twice. You see this in many, many, many dozens of photographs. They're just of the moon. They appear when you enhance the image. And obviously, Burroughs knows something that the public's not privy to. He's really just a classic outsider-insider, very much like Andrew Chaikin is. He's a guy who knows what the truth is, but has agreed to perpetuate the lie rather than to reveal what the truth is for a whole variety of reasons.
Burroughs does a fantastic job of presenting to us exactly the propaganda and the storyline that the powers that be have been selling us as being the truth for decades. And it gives the reader the official historical cover story in brilliant details. He's someone who is most definitely in the know. There are also frames in which some of these lines appear to be behind the moon, where you see the line rising up and being cut off as it hits the lower limb of the moon before reemerging again on the exact opposite side of that intersection point where it continues on its very straight linear path. And in these cases, you can see that the lines do not transit in front of or across the lunar disk, but rather it's the opposite. The moon appears to be transiting and covering these lines. So what's going on here? Why do all these NASA ISS frames of the moon taken from LEO show these parallel lines, and why does this book cover mimic this same visual? What are we seeing, and what is being represented? One hypothesis I've heard has to do with what are called space elevators, which, as the name implies, are elevator transport systems that can be used to lift things, satellites, cargo, spacecraft, people, from the surface of the Earth, lift those up into space. Now, yeah, I realize that to many people, this idea of building elevators with lengths of tens of thousands of kilometers that could extend from the Earth's surface up to geostationary orbit or to the moon probably sounds ludicrous, something that, if it is possible at all, must be centuries and centuries beyond what we're capable of doing today. But it really does not seem to be as beyond state-of-the-art as one might think. These are the kind of projects being worked on today and funded today. Back in 1999, NASA sponsored what was called the Space Elevator Workshop, and its purpose was to explore the feasibility of the development of space elevators in the 21st century. And it discusses plans for construction that would take place during the later half of the century. And that's all the unclassified stuff. That is what they're willing to tell us about their capabilities.
Were the Egyptian pharaohs and clergymen of their time aware of subterranean places that had celestial functions? Judging by hieroglyphics that were discovered in tombs of pharaohs, such as Ramses, one can see a collaboration between what the Egyptians described in their time as a stairway to heaven and what we are seeing now with these space elevators emanating from Earth.
The Vector, NASA's official logo. If you've ever looked at NASA's official logo, both their official insignia and their official seal, you'll see that the most prominent object in the seal is a red swooshing object. They call that the chevron or the vector. If you ask NASA's public affairs office that this symbology is featured so heavily in their insignia and seal, they'll give you what really amounts to the standard facile cover story for the unilluminated. They'll tell you that is a representation of a hypersonic wing design from the 1950s, which was the time the logo was created. Not exactly the case. Someone might want to ask the Russian Federal Space Agency, Roscosmos, that was formed in 1992, why they chose that same logo. And while you're at it, you can ask the Chinese, who formed their space agency in 1996, why in the world they're using a hypersonic wing design from the 1950s as their official logo. Then you can ask the Japanese, the South Koreans, Taiwanese, Malaysia, Mexico, Iran, all of these countries, even Bulgaria. They all utilize the vector symbology in their space agency logos for their national space agencies. It gets even deeper. You can go look at the individual manned program patches for NASA. The Mercury program, for example, a blatant use of covert symbology. In every logo dealing with the Mercury program, you'll see what looks like a number 7 in their logo. And again, NASA's official story is that they put this number 7 there so that they could pay homage to the original 7 Mercury astronauts, kind of forgetting the fact that only 6
Mercury astronauts actually flew into space, because number seven never did. Deke Slayton had a heart problem, so he didn't get to go up. So there were only six Mercury astronauts. Yet there's a seven in every single logo. That's in the official mission or official program insignia for Mercury, as well as the six individual mission patches carrying this logo. And it carries on to the space shuttle program. If you look at the Apollo logo, has a big letter A in it. At least that's what they want you to believe. But it's not. Again, that's just a simple way of explaining away the inclusion of this vector symbology in the logo. If you go to the space shuttle program, the original space shuttle STS program patch is a triangular patch that, again, hides the use of the chevronic vector symbology. And that also goes for many of the STS-specific mission patches. Every single one of the International Space Station expedition patches carry the vector symbology. The Russian Mir space station used the vector symbology. That was their official logo. And you can even go deeper and look at military-industrial complex companies. Look at the logo on a company like Lockheed Martin, two vectors. The XPRIZE logo. Ames Research Labs, U.S. Space Command, when you get into the military realm, the United States Space Command, their official logo is the vector symbol. And when you look at the military's individual space-specific programs, all of them deal with vector symbology in their official insignias. And the question really becomes, who or what are these people paying homage to? And the truth, quite frankly, is out of this world.
Titled The Madonna with St. Giovannino, was made sometime during the 1400s. The artist's name is not known, but at first glance, you can notice a UFO shape in the sky to the right side of the Madonna. If you were to see the original full-size painting, you would see the object clearly. Looking at the enlargement, you can see a man and his dog standing and looking up at the object. However, this painting has something else being depicted. On the left side of the painting, you see the sun and some vector-like objects seemingly flying from or toward the sun. Perhaps this artist was trying to tell us something. In another painting of the Madonna made by a completely different artist, the unusual patterns of the sun and the vector-like symbols have also been added prominently on the Madonna's cloak. You can see the same symbology on this painting as on the one before. This time, however, there is no UFO object to be seen anywhere in the sky. This footage was taken over Mexico City in 2002. There were many other videos and photographs taken of this same type of object, clearly resembling the shapes as seen on the visor of the astronaut, on the moon, and depicted in the 14th century paintings of the Madonna and Child. There is probably a larger story behind the vectors, but it is very unusual this symbology has been adapted by all the United States and foreign space agencies, especially enemies like Iran and others who are also making missions to the moon.
Control Houston, switching now to the voice of Jim Lovell. All right, 60.5, good to hear your voice. Apollo 8 Houston, what does the old moon look like from 60 miles, over?
Okay, Houston, the moon is essentially gray, no color.
Exactly 2 weeks before I finished
editing the first version of Moon Rising, I found out that there's a website on the USGS, it's the United States Geological Survey website, where they have the moon in different colors. They have it on grayscale, they have it on false color, which is infrared and ultraviolet views of the moon. But they also have the spectral color, which is full natural color of the moon. And when I found this out, I just totally freaked out. I mean, first of all, when I airbrushed the moon to build the poster for my film, I didn't realize how close I was to the actual natural colors of the moon. My partner Saskia, she goes, Jose, are you sure you haven't been on the moon? Because it was so close, it was just amazing.
It's so unbelievably beautiful. All these natural colors that exist out there has never been shown to us. I've seen on TV, the moon is gray and black, and it has no color. Well, that couldn't be farther from the truth. It's really compelling. I just want to see more, and it blew me away. It absolutely blew me away.
First of all, with the Clementine mission, it took 1.8 million images of the moon. The high-resolution ones, you can't seem to get any of them because, well, they give you different reasons why you can't get them, but you can't seem to get them. But there's also these natural color images, and they are much, much brighter. They have far more color than they should if our models of the moon are correct. Now, there's two ways you can approach this. One is it could very well be that some of these areas, let's say some of these areas under these glass structures, these domes, are still intact, that there's still atmosphere in there, that there is still stuff growing there. You know, you would obviously have plants and vegetation and various things there that you would need to survive, or that you would have simply for the aesthetics of living in an environment with plants and animals. So it's possible that's what some of this stuff is. Another distinct possibility, and this is the one that I tend to advocate, is that if you really do have these multiple layers of glass and structures all over the moon, what's going to happen is the light is going to scatter and bounce all over the place. And when it does that, you get a prism effect, and it then will combine with other red or green or blue, and it will make other colors.
In order to comprehend the significance about the natural color of the moon, you need to know where these images come from. This is what is called the skin of the moon. It is the actual surface that has been stretched and flattened out. When visual artists wrap this skin around a sphere in their 3D programs, this is what you get. Jose Escamilla downloaded hundreds of sections of the entire skin that is available on the USGS website. The area of interest is in this section here, located on the front side of the moon. When Jose zoomed into this particular section, he recognized some very unusual features and objects in the scene. First of all, the terrain below is clearly presenting itself at an angular view. The disc shape located here appears to be hovering above the surface. When you compare this disc with others that are closer to the terrain, you can clearly see this object is not down on the terrain. Jose found out very quickly that there are more of these discs all over the moon. The discs that you will see in other photos we are going to present are identical to this one. They are hovering on their sides, and sometimes they are hovering as these others below. The other discs you will see are different in color and details, but they are shining light onto the lunar surface as they do whatever they are doing close to the terrain. In all the photos Jose presents in this film, you are seeing the only clear and detailed photography ever released in full color of real flying saucers. NASA has known this, and so have the multitudes of people connected to the space program.
Another thing that I need to bring forth is, in my first film, UFO, the Greatest Story Ever Denied, we had this whole segment on the STS footage of the things that are flying near the tether, things that have the donut hole, but they seem to be alive. I've come to find out that these things are thriving on the moon's surface. There's thousands of them, and they're hovering above the moon's surface. Finding the full color imagery that you're looking at now, the natural colors of the moon, it brings us to a total new reality that the moon could have been teeming with life back in 94 when these photos were taken, or it may still be teeming with life.
And the truth is, once you look at these pictures of the moon or Mars, and you realize that this stuff is structure, that there's artificial structures there, pretty much everything is on the table.
There are so many lunar landscapes filled with color and textures unlike anything ever seen before with the human eye. There are deep crevices and overhangs where you can see immensely huge openings, or what appear to be cavern entrances. There are far too many gigantic and massive structures, as Candy described. You have to see them for yourself in order to grasp the size of these complex and, in most cases, alien-like architecture, as you have seen in many films. You will even see some strange vine-like webbing, as depicted in Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. Glass domes, UFOs, massive buildings, and scaffolding spread throughout the lunar terrain in many sizes, shapes, and forms. It is evident the missions to the moon were more involved than gathering rocks and dirt samples. There is no doubt we went to the moon. It is what was waiting for us when we got there that this film is about.
Finding the full color imagery that you're looking at now, the natural colors of the moon, it brings us to a total new reality that the moon could have been teeming with life back in 94 when these photos were taken, or it may still be teeming with life.
I think they are still there. They were there in the 70s when the last Apollo mission was there. I found lights on.
It seems that, at least in some areas of the moon, that the lights might still be on.
We're talking about the covering up of hyper-advanced technology that could do away with fossil fuels, our dependence on fossil fuels. We're talking about technology that allows for much quicker transport through space than we've ever been told.
What I think has happened is that all these other countries somehow have found out that we went there, that we brought back this technology, that we're exploiting this technology. And they want a piece of the action. So that's why, it's the only reason why they would spend the kind of money that they're spending, India, China, all these, Japan, all these countries, to go back to the moon. To what? To collect rocks? No, they're going back there because there's something incredibly valuable there that they know that we have, the United States brought back, that they want a piece of. And it's a tremendous risk. You know, there's not just simply the risk to the astronauts' lives. There's, if you believe some of the stories, there's even a risk to, other people that might already be there.
In the end result, I have found that the moon is in full color. It's not a black and white object. It's not made of, impact craters and this kind of thing. There's a lot more to it. NASA has deliberately tampered a lot of the photography. They've eliminated the crosshairs to eliminate what was in the background in the sky or in the landscapes. And there are some very significant things that have occurred. All we say, we don't know the answers.
You know, in this whole realm, none of these individual researchers, not necessarily Jose, not Richard and I, we don't have all the answers. We all have a piece of the puzzle. We all see different parts of it. And there's certain aspects of this that we're all good at.
All I'm presenting to you, and it's backed up with facts, all my films present to you with evidence that is fully acknowledged. You can backtrace it. You can do, as they say, back engineer everything I present. It's all there for you to see.
What we do know is that there's more information out there. Again, there's 1.8 million Clementine images sitting on the web. No one person can access even a handful of those and look at them and study them and find stuff on them. So what we need is for people that see these films and see documentaries like this is to understand that this stuff does exist. They can't hide it all.
When I was talking with the gentleman from Belcom, and we were discussing the lie, everything he was telling me was different from what we were being told was the truth. And at one point I asked him, I said, man, you lied about a lot, didn't you? And instantly he said, no, we didn't lie about certain things. We lied about everything. None of it was true.
Thank you. have vowed that we shall not be governed by a hostile flag of conquest, but by a banner of freedom and peace. We have vowed that we shall not see space filled with weapons of mass destruction, but with instruments of knowledge and understanding. Yet the vows of this nation can only be fulfilled if we in this nation are first, and therefore we intend to be first.